obsessed.
Yeah, I like to make her swim, like. Entertainment.
That's how this episode's gonna open. Laura's talking about her new zombie mermaid she got tattooed on her forearm for context.
It's like it's just in the perfect spot where if I wave my arm, she swims.
Her tail's curved, so she doesn't. Just but go I like with it. That you think that.
Look, I've been stuck on the couch for 4 days now, sick, and so I've had to entertain myself somehow.
And that's how you've been doing it?
Yes.
You need to be more creative.
Well, okay, I watched two shows, which I'll say for recommendation station, but that was also what I was doing.
I tried to watch more of the Cecil Hotel today. I got 2 minutes in, and I was like, I can't do the voiceovers of the posts.
Oh, really?
Sorry.
Okay. All right, we'll move on.
I'm just watching, and I'm like, I hate all of you.
I know. There was, like, the one part, and I was like, I hope Ashley can look past this. But apparently not.
I saw the Morbid Black Star introduction bit. But I know who the people are involved anyway. So I know about him and stuff like that. But I saw the introduction and I was like, I hate this so much.
Look, they really hammed it up, which was a bit annoying.
It was the most hammiest ham I've ever seen.
Yeah. But it was just good. I mean, I liked it. But I also, you know, love Married at First Sight and like The Bachelor and stuff. So.
Trash.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Hi, I'm Ash.
I'm Laura.
Ooh, customer service voice.
I know. I'm trying to be nice. It's not working.
Weird.
I know.
I hate it.
Shut it down.
Turn that shit off.
Just be myself.
How have you been?
Sick.
Same. So, surprise, thanks for listening to our live show episode because we just couldn't record. So I'm glad we had that in a bank somewhere.
Yeah. And actually, my friend Nick messaged me and he really liked it. So.
And he was at the live show, wasn't he?
No, this is Other Nick.
Other Nick. Yeah. Fuck, we need to come. One of them needs a different name.
Okay. There's. Oh, I don't know how to identify. Okay. There's Nick with a K and Nick with a C. So Nick was watching.
So K Nick and C Nick.
Yeah. We'll just call him K and C.
Okay. And then we're going to start calling them together as Casey.
Yeah, and then it'll become KFC.
We've already made the whole jump. No even need to worry about it.
The problems of being an intellectual, we're just too far ahead of ourselves.
It's like the ultimate chess, but it's just bullshit.
Yeah, it doesn't help anything, but it's a good time. No, so Nick with a K was the one that was watching the live show with us.
Okay.
And then Nick with a C is the one who messaged me and was like, your live show was really good. I'm like, thank you. We didn't have anything to put out, so we released it.
And at the start of the live show, we say this will be exclusive for the people attending the show for 6 months or until we don't have anything to, we need like an emergency backup. And it happened at about the same time.
Yep,
so
that was foreshadowing.
So this is us doxing ourselves and saying it wasn't the 6 month thing, it was the fact that we didn't have an episode to put out, so you guys got the live show,
which like we did research and we were like ready to go, but it's just we both decided to die in different ways and then we couldn't do it.
We did both decide to die in different ways. That's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not kidding. Like, I was sick. Like, I was 4 days on the couch, unable to move and just being angry at everything.
I was like bed rest as well. Yeah. But instead of angry, I was just like internally frustrated.
Yeah.
And I was just like crying because I couldn't pick a Netflix show. Like.
Yeah. I had, I broke because my show finished that I was watching and I went to put something else on. And the PlayStation remote was flat and I legit cried and threw it across the room. And then I cried some more because I was sorry.
Did you just call it a remote?
Yeah.
You mean the controller?
Well, because...
Why did that bother me so much?
Well, okay. Just to justify it, I only use my PlayStation for Netflix.
That's fine. So... But it's a controller.
But I feel like it's more of a remote because I only watch things with it. I don't ever control anything with it. So, okay. The controller
died.
No, I died and then I cried because I hurt the controller and then I was like, I'm really sick.
At least you're self-aware.
I was, yeah. And then I hate being told to rest. Like, that's my thing. Like, if I have nothing scheduled, I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm going to watch Netflix and chill. But,
because then it's chilling.
Exactly.
It's, like, relaxing. But if you're forced to do it, then it's Yeah.
Then I just get salty because it's like, I have stuff to do. I even, because in my head, I was
even though
like,
you don't.
Well, because I was like, okay, I have to rest for the next few days because if I don't, I'll die. But I'm like, I'm going to get ahead and write like a bunch of podcast episodes. But my brain was sick too. And I
did the same thing. I was like, oh, so I have 5 now. Half started.
Yeah.
And not half finished, half started. Yep. So I've picked it and I had all the articles and shit up.
Yep.
And I have the information in my brain.
Yep.
But that's where it's going to stay.
Yep. I didn't even get that part. I got 2 half started.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So. Well, some of them. So I did this thing where I was like, I've really been listening and like I started finally reading this book that I've had for ages.
Yep.
About Australian true crimes and stuff. Like started writing all these things and I was like, these are really good ones. And then like, because I was sick, I was like, I don't want to be sad like this.
Yeah. Isn't the world bad enough?
Yeah. I was like, it just seems everything's so dark right now. And the whole universe is just so dark and empty. I don't want to write this. So my story today is, it's short.
Okay.
But it's because it, to me at the time, I hate it now, but
okay.
At the time, I was like, how the fuck does this happen? But it's not as like existentially dark as my true crime stories usually are.
Okay. So it's like a mid-level
somebody
dark.
Does die.
Right.
But they're not murdered.
Okay.
So it's just more about them as the person. It's like, what the fuck?
Interesting.
Yeah. So
are you going first? Because I have no idea.
I am.
Okay.
I just had to look at the notes again. I guess we're going off the 26th because I don't remember who went first for the live show episode because all I did was cut out us waffling at the start and then put it up.
Okay.
I did not check that episode.
But it's authentic. Like, that's what happened.
It was a live show. So, I mean, you got exactly what they got yeah. as well, except for at the start when I was panicking about being hot.
Oh, yeah. Because it was the middle of summer and we were, like, sweating balls.
Well, remember, because I also, like, at the start of the episode, they say it, different people. Remember I bought a ticket to our own show so that yep. I could monitor it because I was so nervous? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how that episode opens.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That was good fun.
Yeah.
Once you get past the debilitating anxiety, it was good fun.
Yeah, and the fact that, yeah, because the stream key didn't work
yeah.
at the start.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
Move on quickly.
Okay, so my story is about a woman named Laurie Erica Ruff.
Oh.
So, on Christmas Eve in 2010, Laurie Erica Ruff was found dead by a single gunshot wound to her head. So there's the death.
Okay.
The wound was self-inflicted, and in the car with her was found an 11-page rambling suicide note to her husband and a sealed letter to her daughter to be opened on her 18th birthday. But the mystery here isn't in Laurie's death, but in her life, because no one actually knew who the fuck Laurie was.
What? I'm intrigued.
So, yeah, so this is kind of why I picked this. So it's not so much about how she died. Mm-hmm. Or why she died. Like, it's her reason for death is mental illness.
Okay.
But just the story of her life, to me, I was like, how the fuck? How did she get away?
Okay.
So you'll figure it out eventually.
I'm so keen.
So the months before Laurie's death, her and her husband, John Ruff, had separated. John had moved back in with his parents and Laurie had been left with their daughter in Leonard in Texas. So the reason for their separation was Laurie had become overly protective and paranoid about her daughter. So paranoid and protective that she wouldn't let her husband's parents see or even talk to their granddaughter.
Oh.
And Laurie would not let her out of her sight. And this seemingly happened gradually, but like out of the blue.
Okay.
So there wasn't like an incident that she'd lost trust or anything like that. She just started getting really weird about it.
Okay. So it's like a paranoia type thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So neighbors of Laurie and her daughter noted before her death that the two were undernourished and that Laurie was often seen raving back and forth and incoherently while outside of her home.
Uh-oh.
Laurie also was sending harassing emails to the Ruffs and created a scene during a custody exchange where she stole their house keys in an altercation.
It could have been worse.
It definitely could have been worse.
Yeah. Not great, but could have been worse.
Room for improvement.
Yes.
But also, shouldn't have really happened.
Yeah.
So the cause for the Ruffs, so this caused the Ruffs to serve Laurie with a cease and desist notice.
Mm-hmm.
After the funeral, Ruffs decide to investigate what was going on in her life and perhaps get some answers about why she was acting so weird. Entering the house, they discover that it's in total disarray.
Yeah, that's what I expect.
The place is just manic.
Mm-hmm.
There are weeks old dishes piled up, old laundry, and just trash everywhere. Kind of like the beginning of like a hoarding situation.
Oof, that's not good.
Yeah. They found piles of shredded documents and plenty of just like odd, nonsensical scribbles on random things. Boxes, cups, all sorts of stuff.
Oh my God.
Eventually, they do discover a lockbox in a cupboard. So it's like pushed right to the back. It's buried under a bunch of stuff, covered in dust, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The family managed to pry it open, and inside they found more scribblings with such things as North Hollywood Police, 402 months, and Ben Perkins are just some of the things they can sort of pick out of that.
Oh my God, I want
to
know.
All of which led them to believe that Laurie was perhaps trying to avoid jail time.
Mm-hmm.
They also found a name change certificate with the name changed to Laurie Erica Kennedy and a birth certificate with the name Becky Sue Turner. The family had never heard of a Becky Sue Turner before.
Is this story going to make me question everyone in my life and whether they're lying to me?
A little bit.
Fun.
I mean, how many people do you know say that they had no family and they don't ever talk about their past even a little bit?
Me. Sometimes.
Maybe you're not you.
Who am I?
Did you steal someone's birth certificate?
Not that I remember.
Well, that's at least you're not aware of it.
Yeah.
So a little digging into this Becky Sue Turner, and a friend of the Turner family revealed that this girl had died in a house fire at the age of 2 years old.
Or did she?
No, she did.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
With the use of a private investigator, they found that neither Becky Sue or Laurie had ever been a client or even spoken with this Ben Perkins that they found the notes about.
Right.
So he was a prominent lawyer in the African-American community at the time who had never, ever taken on a white client before. So he knew that she could not be somebody that he'd met.
So why was his name written down?
We don't know.
Oh my God.
This is why I was like, I was reading this and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because there's, I'm sorry, but there's no answers.
Oh, my God. I hate you so much.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's just a not so kind of like backstory.
Okay,
keep going. So there were no matches for the woman they knew as Laurie in any existing fingerprint or facial recognition database.
Okay.
So at the time, though, like this is 2010, so early 2000s. I mean, that sort of stuff wasn't the best.
No, it was mainly like violent criminals that were already in
yeah,
the system.
So at least we know she's not that.
Yeah. I mean, she still could be. She just hasn't
been
arrested.
Caught. She'd just been getting away with it.
Yeah.
So the case became kind of sensational at the time, and there were a few articles published about Laurie and her false identity, some even traveling like worldwide.
Mm.
In 2013, the case spread to a Colleen Fitzpatrick. So you might know her name because she's a former nuclear physicist who actually created the field of forensic genealogy.
That's so cool.
I know.
I love that shit.
Isn't that so cool? So Fitzpatrick had John, who was Laurie's husband, and their daughter tested so that she could isolate Laurie's DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Using a direct public genealogy company, kind of like 23andMe or Ancestry.com, whatever.
Yep.
She found a first cousin related to Laurie's DNA. The cousin was totally non-responsive to all contact attempts and didn't want to talk.
Oh my God, why?
I don't know.
Sensing a theme here.
Yeah. So it's now 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So Laurie has been dead for 3 years and they still don't know who she actually is.
Oh my God.
So they know that she had this Becky Sue Turner certificate of a child who died when they were two.
Mm-hmm.
Then she used this certificate to change her name to Laurie Erica Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is who she was when she met her husband.
Yep.
And then when she changed her name to Ruff when they got married, that is who she was when she died. But okay. Nobody knows who she was so far before she changed her name.
To the
using
name of
this,
a dead girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Using this false identity.
And the cousin won't tell us.
Yeah. So, 2013, the search has been going on for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a third cousin of the first cousin was finally found. So this is technically Laurie's fourth cousin.
Yeah, something like that.
Something really ridiculous. And they were actually able to get in contact with this person and trace back the lineage to figure out who Laurie was. The family had never heard of Laurie Kennedy. They had no idea who this person is. So who did they identify their image as? Their cousin, Kimberly McLean.
What?
So who the fuck is Kimberly McLean and how did she end up with an identity that isn't hers?
What is she running from?
We still don't know.
God damn it.
Sorry.
Okay.
So Kimberly McLean was born October 16, 1968. So she's about, I think, 3 or 4 years older, technically, than this birth certificate that she had in the lockbox.
Okay.
She lived in Philadelphia, and at 17, she left home.
Mm-hmm.
The reasons that we have for her leaving home is that she didn't get on with her mum or her stepdad.
Okay.
So there could be a whole plethora of bullshit behind there that we just don't know because nobody will talk about it or nobody knows.
Okay.
Nobody knows for sure how Kim ended up with the birth certificate of Becky Turner. The family believe that she may have stolen it from their home during a break-in, something like that. Or it's possible that, like, this is the 80s when she did this, she could have just gone and requested her birth certificate.
Yeah.
And not needed the proof. This is what boggles my mind. She didn't need the proof to get her birth certificate because her birth certificate would be the proof that she would need, but she doesn't have it.
Yeah. Like, oh, I need to prove my identity, but I've lost my birth certificate. Can I get it?
Yeah. And because she's 17, she wouldn't have anything else.
The only thing is, like, if she was, like, a two-year-old girl, like, do the dates line up? Like, if she walked in and was like, hey, I need my birth certificate, like, were they born around the same time? So that
they were about 3 years apart. So, I mean, at the time, Becky Sue would have been 15.
Yeah.
And Kim would have been 16, 17.
That passes.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
McLennan used the birth certificate once she got it, which apparently was easy, to obtain an identification card for Idaho.
Okay.
Then she moved to Texas and applied to change her name from her assumed identity, Becky Turner, to Laurie Kennedy. Eventually, once she had this original document, she was able to get more and more in her new name. She then got a social security number. She was able to earn her GED, go to college, and eventually meet the wealthy East Texas Ruff family and marry their son, John, in 2003, who she met in Bible study class. Texas. Wow. originally, Laurie told John she was from Arizona. Becky Sue was actually from Bakersfield, California. And McLean was from Philadelphia. So I really don't understand how all of this. So she was in Philadelphia. She left, somehow went to some court in California, got the birth certificate. Then from California, used the birth certificate from California to get an ID in Idaho. And then from Idaho, she moved to Texas and got her social security number. I don't know if this girl's lucky or smart.
Could be either. I mean, it does sound like a very, like, if she left home when she was young, it does sound like a very young person thing to do where you just roam around and you're kind of like, yeah, I'm going to go here. And then, yeah, I'm going to go here. And
I don't even know how she found out about Becky Sue Turner if they're not even from the same town.
I mean, you can look up, like, newspapers for recent deaths and then be like, that one.
Yeah, but it would have been 15 years ago. It would have been in the 80s because she left at 17 or 18.
I just remembered something.
This is why it just trips me out.
It is. Well, because there are, like, people you can pay to set up new identities for you, and it's what they do. So you pay them, like, a ridiculous amount of money. They have, like, a file of dead people that you pick. Like, or either they pick or you pick which one fits you best, and then you just go from there and they arrange documents for you, and then theoretically you can just keep jumping from there. You just need that initial setup. So
how the fuck does a 17-year-old from Philadelphia find that?
It can be done.
That's insane.
People everywhere.
That's insane. I think it just trips me out that, like, I remember taking a friend to apply to get a passport.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like, we would have been 15, 16. I would have just got my license, so 16. Like, the amount of shit that she needed to have
Yeah.
To do that. It's just, it blows my mind that it was so easy for somebody to just do this and nobody knew.
Well, this is why I'm thinking there's like a criminal involvement here, because it is really hard to do. And if she's like some kid that's just like, I need to change my name. What if it's like a witness protection thing?
I feel like they'd have that on record somewhere.
Not if it's like really high up. Sorry, I've been watching Prison Break. So like,
oh, you have too?
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, it's the government. It's getting in my brain. But... But yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, how has this even been able to happen?
I don't know. It trips me out. So she said to John, her husband, and like when they first met, that she had no siblings and no family, and that's all she would ever tell him. So she also claimed to be from Arizona. But can somebody tell me, can some of our Americans, don't y'all have very specific accents?
Yes, that's what I'm wondering too. Like, California sounds very different to like... Arizona.
People say Australians have different accents. I don't hear it, but also I don't listen.
Oh, just go to Brisbane. They sound cooked.
I don't think I've noticed it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's like all the slang that's different.
I think I've moved around too much to notice it anymore.
Okay. But it's like the whole Palmer, Palmy, like it kind of depends where you come from and there's like different slang for different regions and...
Oh, yeah, like Poloni.
What the hell's Poloni?
Ah, fuck, what do you guys call it? What do they call it in South Australia? Fuck, this is when I need Tanner. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll Google it after I've removed this from being full screen and then I'll tell you.
Okay.
So yeah, they elope in 2004. The only other person there besides the two of them was their preacher.
Yeah.
Which is suspicious.
Hell yeah.
I get eloping because family's too much trouble.
Oh yeah.
Or you're just frustrated with, like, wedding planning. Tanner and I thought about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because we were like, this is expensive and I'm tired. And I was like, can we just do a pop-up wedding and just, like, just be you and me? And Tanner's like, our parents will murder us. And I was like, yeah, fair, okay.
Yeah.
And he also has a lot of friends.
Okay.
So they have their daughter in 2008 and almost immediately the marriage begins to break down.
Mm-hmm.
And then that takes us back to the beginning of the story. So she died and it was 6 years later that they finally found out who she really was.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that is the story of Laurie Erica Ruff or I guess Kimberly McLean.
Or any of the other names she went by.
Or just Becky Sue Turner or whatever. But I just thought that was nuts.
Hell yeah.
I thought that was a little nuts. And I came across that and I was like, yeah, all right.
Like, interesting. Something yeah. to think about.
But I do, now that I think about it more, your idea of that makes more sense because she would have been quite young.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would believe a 17-year-old that's not genius level intelligence would be able to do that.
Very true. Yeah. Was there anything in her suicide note that was, like, of note, or was it more just...
None of it made any fucking sense.
Ugh. Damn it.
Yeah.
That's frustrating.
Yeah. And, like, there was none of it of, like, really a why.
Mm-hmm.
And none of her, like, scribblings or anything made any sense. They opened the letter for her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make any fucking sense.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What if there's, like, a cipher somewhere? And it does make sense, but it doesn't.
You've definitely been watching too much Prison Break.
I've watched it a lot. I finished season one in 3 days, and I'm now on season two.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
Oh, let me find out this Poloni thing.
Oh, yeah.
Poloni in South Australia is what I'm going to write. Okay, in South Australia, they call it Fritz, or Bung Fritz, which means lunch and meat. In New South Wales, it's called Devon, and in parts of Queensland, it's called Windsor Sausage.
I think I've heard of Devon before. But I don't really know what any of that
is. This is Poloni.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's that weird...
Some people call it Bologna or Bologna.
Oh, I've heard Bologna before, but not Poloni.
Yeah. In WA, we called it Poloni.
I'm going to chalk
Poloni
it up...
and tomato sauce sandwiches. It's actually very good.
I'm going to chalk it up to me being vegetarian, not knowing what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so moving on to my case now. Today's case is a bit of a spin-off from the Conjuring franchise series.
Oh, it's a partial part four.
It is, yes, because it was a special request from Ashley.
Oh! That's gonna be so loud. I'm so sorry. Is it Bully Rectory?
It is Bully Rectory.
I wrote it down.
Yay!
Because I couldn't remember what it was called.
Yeah, so I looked into the Bully Rectory. For people that haven't...
My squeal was so loud. I'm so sorry. I just keep thinking about it.
That was the most like enthusiastic light bulb moment I think I've ever seen. It was like, oh!
I was like, what the fuck did we talk about? It's 3 weeks ago.
But you got it.
I did.
Well done.
It helps I wrote it down. This is what this page is for.
Thank God for writing things down.
Thank
That's
God
all I
for
have to
starting
say.
To take notes finally.
Yeah.
7 months later.
I think we're doing better since we started taking
notes. Well.
Yeah. So if you haven't listened to my prior episodes on this sort of stuff, go listen to them because, again, I worked very hard on them.
Don't listen to this shit backwards. Start from the beginning.
What happens if you play out episodes backwards? Does anything weird
Half of that shit doesn't make sense.
Only half of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you don't want to listen to it, basically when we spoke about the Nun movie and the very confusing origins about it, you would have heard us mention the Bawley Rectory, which the Warrens actually visited on multiple occasions. So then I decided to look into it.
Because for once in my life, Ashley knew something sort of what Laura was talking about.
I actually wrote in here that the Warrens had actually visited and had a paranormal encounter in England at a place called the Bawley Rectory, which Ashley correctly identified. Well done again, Ashley.
Yes! Still proud of myself. Yep. First and last time for everything.
See, I wrote you credit.
Thank you. I would have forgotten.
Yeah, I know. But no, I looked into it and we're going to find out why the Bawley Rectory is considered to be the most haunted house in England.
Yeah.
And whether it actually is.
Yeah.
Dun dun. So
it's now law and order.
I've been doing that a lot, but anyways, so this is basically going to read like a giant timeline because that was how the information came out and it was a bit confusing, but anyways. So in 1862 the house is built for the parish rector, which I had to look up because I didn't know what it was, but it's basically like the head of a regional church, but he's not a priest, he kind of runs it.
Priest manager.
Yeah, kind of. And, like, since it was built, this rectory was like, the centre of local gossip because it just looked really creepy. Like,
you know what I just thought about when I just thought about the word priest manager? I mean, renegade priest, but a band manager.
Yes. Yes. Our joke is now running.
Are we roadies and everything one day?
Oh, yeah. This is going to keep going. We never let anything go. So yeah, basically, like, since it was built, it became the center of local gossip because it looked really creepy. It had like these big pointed things at the front of it, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it was like
pillars.
It was like it says pointed east frontage, so it's like it's the front of the building, but it was all pointy and just creepy.
It's just a sharp house.
Yeah. And then It was also gothic architecture, so it just it looked creepy and people didn't like it. And
I would probably love it.
Yeah, I thought it was really pretty, but it's no longer there and we'll find out why. So the former rectory that was there before had actually burned down in 1841, so then this new one was built in 1862. So Bawley is a small town with lots of local legends, including that of a Benedictine monastery, which is just another form of Christianity. The monastery existed in 1362, where a monk and a nun from another convent had a secret affair. Upon finding out about the affair, the monk apparently was beheaded and the nun was buried alive in the walls of the monastery.
That's so extreme.
I know.
Just strip them of their, like, holy bits. I don't know.
I mean, it's Christianity. Everything's extreme. They don't do, like,
subtle is not key.
No. Now, the thing that's confusing about this is I don't actually know how this story about this old monastery and the Bawley Rectory actually got combined. Like, I don't know if supposedly the monastery was on the site of the rectory or if it was in the same town or if people were just like, oh, this is creepy and this is creepy, let's smash them together. Like, I just don't know.
I think I heard the version where the nun lived at the rectory.
Yeah.
I think that was the connection that I knew of.
Okay. Yeah,
but I don't think that's true, but that's what I heard.
Well, interestingly enough, my next sentence is that this is largely thought to be nothing more than a local legend because they couldn't find any evidence of this monastery or the monks or anything. Later on, we'll have a name that's associated with the nun, supposedly. But again, there's no like paper trail of where this name came from. It's just poof, there it is.
Yeah.
So 1863, the Borley Rectory ghost stories start to circulate because basically there was a group of school children that came through and supposedly they were like, we saw the ghost of a nun. But it's also believed that this story was made up and it was actually created by the first rector's children. So,
right.
You're going to...
Fucking kids.
You're going to notice a theme here. Just saying. Jumping forward to 1892, Reverend Henry D. E. Bull, who is one of the early rectors, I don't know if he was the first one or just an early one, he dies in the most haunted room in the house, which is the blue bedroom. It should also be noted that the Bull family established a pet cemetery on the property.
No.
Yep.
I mean, that's adorable, but don't do that.
Well, I'm just...
Not where you live.
No. I'm also concerned at how many pets died in that house that they needed a cemetery for them.
Unless it was also, like, other people's pets.
Not from what I read. It was, like, the Bull family. Okay. Yeah.
That's bad.
There's not a lot of details on it, but I'm just like, pet cemetery at your house. Questionable choices.
Mm.
So then we go forward to 1900 and another group of school children visiting the rectory claim to see the ghost of a nun. Once again, it's thought that this was also made up, but based more around the scary stories that were already circulating and basically hysteria.
Yep.
1927, Reverend Bull's son, Reverend Henry Harry Bull, dies in the blue bedroom as well. Later that year...
Motherfucker should just stop sleeping in there.
Yeah, pretty much. So then later the... Sometime during that year, the rest of the Bull family move out. And then later on in the year as well, Reverend Guy Smith and his wife move into the rectory. And this is the beginning of like a whole new series of spooky happenings. So the first thing to happen is that the skull of a young woman was supposedly found in the cupboard by the Reverend's wife. Which I have a lot of problems with this because I'm like...
In the cupboard?
Yeah, in the cupboard. Like just some cupboard in the house. They were like, oh my God, there's a skull. Which I'm like, several... families have lived in there at this point. So either you bought it with you or someone pranked you, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently a skull was found in the house. And apparently this is when the hauntings all began. It was upon finding this skull, which I'm like, okay.
So in a wall, sure. In a cupboard? I don't think so.
No, I reckon someone's like, oh, look, it's a skull. Put it in the cupboard.
Yeah.
You know? I have a lot of issues. Anyway.
We know.
True. So basically what they start reporting is that there's strange lights that would just appear in random rooms. There would be unknown footsteps walking across the floor in different rooms, like above them, below them, just kind of everywhere. And an apparition of a horse-drawn carriage would be seen around the property as well, which I'm like, that's kind of cool though. Like instead of like a ghosty figure, it's like a full-blown horse-drawn carriage.
That's terrifying, but also great.
I thought it was kind of cool.
I wonder if that has something to do with the pet cemetery.
I reckon. So then...
The carriage is also buried there.
Yeah.
Carriage with pet.
They dug a really big hole and then they just put it in there and it's like...
All the gear. All on. Yep.
Yeah, just all of it. That'd be a big hole. So next what the couple decides to do, and this is probably the most shady thing, is that they decide to contact the Daily Mirror. And they claim that they did this in order to get the attention of the Society for Psychical Research. But a lot of people think that they were just doing it for attention and publicity because they didn't even call the authorities. They just went straight to the Daily Mirror.
That's a bit sus.
Yep. So then the Daily Mirror decides to send a reporter along with Mr. Harry Price, who was at the time just starting to make a name for himself as a leading psychical researcher.
Nice cover.
Thank you. I've been really sick, guys. I also wrote this when I was like just starting to get sick, so
it's in the early stages of delirium.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, great.
I'm editing as I go basically. So upon Price's arrival, the paranormal activity apparently...
What? I just realized when you said that I'm editing as I go, I was doing that too because I'm pretty sure instead of Laurie in one of my sentences I wrote Lorax.
Gee.
You're not alone.
Our fans are so good for sticking with us.
We're sorry.
We're sorry. But also, you love us. So, yeah, basically once Price starts arriving, the paranormal activity apparently increased with a report later written by the investigator claiming that he witnessed spirit messages being written on the walls, objects being thrown around the room, and just all this other crazy shit that happened.
It got worse when he got there?
Yes.
Sus.
Yeah. Even more sus is that when Mr. Price left the residence, the paranormal phenomenon suddenly stopped.
Somebody's not very committed.
No. I think someone's trying to make a quick buck, just quietly. So now we're in 1929. The Smiths move out in June and another family called the Foysters move in the October.
What a name.
I know. My fucking autocorrect was like, no, it's Foysters. I'm like, no, it's Foysters.
That's a beer.
We argued about it a lot, but then I added it to dictionary and it stopped bitching.
I've just started doing that to my work emails because some of my school names and like names of suppliers and stuff are just like wars with a Z and stuff like that. So I'm like, add a dictionary. Fuck it. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, stop bitching at me. Yeah, so now we've got the Foysters in there, which consists of Reverend Lionel Algernon Foyster, which is such a cool name.
Mm.
His wife, Marianne, and their daughter, Adelaide. This family stayed in the house for 5 years and are considered to be the most infamous family associated with the Borley Rectory, especially Marianne. Hmm. And we'll get to why in a second.
Okay.
During their stay at the Borley Rectory, Reverend Foysster worked to compile a giant dossier documenting all of the paranormal experiences they were encountering. Everything from windows breaking, writing appearing on the walls, Adelaide being locked in a room which didn't have a key, objects being thrown around the house, and Marianne was apparently the center of all of the haunting because she specifically reports that she was thrown from bed one day by an unknown entity and was attacked on multiple occasions by, again, something she couldn't see.
Eek.
This dossier was later forwarded on to Mr. Price, and upon reading it, he reported to the Daily Mirror that he was extremely concerned about the escalation of the haunting and would be returning to the rectory in order to exorcise the house.
So this is a different family to the one that went straight to the... Right, yeah. Okay.
The ones that went to the Daily Mirror were the Smiths, and this is Nella Foysters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently... Harry Price did return and he attempted not one but two exorcisms on the Borley Rectory, but both were unsuccessful. The Borley Rectory was now becoming very popular amongst the psychical research community, and this saw a number of reporters, researchers, and amateur investigators flooding to the rectory in the hopes of trying to see some ghostly phenomenon for themselves. In a quote from a 1929 edition of the Daily Mirror, we can see just how interested people were becoming in the hauntings. The rectory continues to receive the unwelcome attention of hundreds of curious people, and at night the headlights of their cars may be seen for miles around. One enterprising firm even ran a motor coach to the rectory, inviting the public to come and see the Borley ghost, while cases of rowdyism were frequent.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's got its own taxi.
It has. This became like a bus tour or like a something tour, and yeah, so it was really escalating. 1931, messages directed at Marianne are now being scrawled across the walls. The messages were highly illegible, but seemed to have been written in a hurried or panicked state. The parts that could be read seemed to be asking for rest and mass prayers. But, like, you look at it, it's just, like, scribble on the walls and then the odd word that you can make
out. So it looks like a doctor's handwriting.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I bet if they got a doctor in there, he'd be like, oh, yeah, that's, like, a prescription for Panadol.
Doctor wouldn't know what it says. Nurse would.
Yeah. That's a good point, actually. During this time, they were also visited by a medium who has the best name I've ever heard. His name was Guy Lestrange.
That's fake.
100%. But I just really like the idea that you're going out in the world.
Baron von Coast comes the best one.
Oh, yeah. That was a good effort from us. Now, Guy Lestrange was quoted of saying this of his visit to the Borley Rectory. Later, being entertained by the rector and his wife, he heard for the first time of mysterious forms, male and female, being seen inside and outside of the house, of lights in unoccupied rooms, of articles appearing and being thrown, of fires breaking out, of mysterious whisperings and unexplained writings on the walls and scraps of paper. Once the rector told him he was working alone in his study when he saw a pencil rise from the desk and scrawl words on the wall in front of him. No hand was visible. However, now it is largely considered that Lestrange's claims were false, given that the Reverend's personal accounts of the paranormal phenomenon he, like, personally encountered didn't mention anything about a floating pencil. He never brought it up. And a lot of people think that Lestrange was simply trying to further his reputation by being associated with the notorious Borley Rectory.
Mm.
So he's a bit of a crock of shit.
This is like a just a house full of sus.
Pretty much. You got to write that down.
Yep.
Yeah. It was also noted that the foister's daughter, Adelaide, being young at the time, could have been responsible for the scribbled handwriting, as she was a known scribbler, being that she was a toddler. So she could have just written shit everywhere.
Yeah, that seems legit.
Yeah, so that was something that was kind of mentioned.
I wonder how high it was, though.
It didn't actually say.
I feel just... like a ghost is, like, middle up.
She could have, like, dragged a chair, like, climbed on it and be like, "Wee!"
That seems pretty advanced.
She could be a genius, you don't know.
I don't know. Not if she's a known scribbler.
True. Okay, so now this is where the story takes a turn. It was later revealed that the beginning of the writings on the wall coincided with the beginning of an affair that Marianne, who was the wife of Reverend Foister, was having with a lodger that they had at the time by the name of Frank Peerless, who was staying at the rectory.
Yes, Frank. His name's Frank. It's got to be him.
It's got to be. Marianne herself would later confess to the affair and admit that she would often use the excuse of paranormal phenomenon to explain away the things that were going bump in the night. Wink. You bet I wrote in wink there too.
I bet you did.
Much later in her life, she would also admit that she never experienced anything paranormal at the Bawley Rectory, and that it was often creaks from bad weather, other people that were in the house, or she just straight up lied to cover her affair. So this pretty much destroyed all credibility of the paranormal claims that were going on. And although some of the events seemed to be legitimate at the time, they were all now considered lies to cover up this affair.
So it's a shitty thing to do, but that's so creative.
It's so smart.
Like, people say, "I'm working late." She's like, "Nah, ghost."
Yeah. Oh my God. Honey, like, did you hear that creaking last night? Like, yeah, it's the ghost, man. Like, oh, scared me too.
Yeah, that's some pretty creaky springs.
Oh yeah,
that ghost has got.
So 1935, the Foisters leave Bawley Rectory and the building stays empty for 2 years, so no one else moved in for that time. 1937, Harry Price returns and lives in the house for one whole year, attempting to prove the existence of the hauntings and the ghost. He brings with him 48 fellow investigators, said to be mostly students that would work on the weekends, and what he called official observers, whatever that means. And during this time, he basically just held a crap load of seances, and he did all sorts of things, tried to get pictures. That was a Microsoft update. That wasn't even my fault. I even had other messages coming through and they didn't make noises, and it's not until the Microsoft auto update comes through. It's not.
It Microsoft is. Thinks it is.
It's going so well.
You were doing quite well.
Thank you. Now, pretty much the only thing I heard from, like, during this time was that during one seance in particular, they apparently contacted the spirits of a nun and an unidentified male, where the male allegedly predicted that the rectory would once again burn down on the 27th of March, 1938. So the following year.
It happened, didn't it?
27th of February, 1939, now owned by a new owner by the name of Captain W.H. Gregson. As the captain was moving into his new...
That's a dope name.
It's a pretty dope name. The captain was moving into his new residence when he apparently knocked over an oil lamp, which ignited the entire building and it burned to the ground.
That sucks.
Yeah. So, okay, the ghost was off by 11 months. But damn, ghosty. Also, it's worth noting that the date that the ghost said was the 27th of March, 1938, and it burned down on the 27th of February, 1939.
Ghosts just can't read.
Yeah.
Just can't do months.
I think they were a little bit dyslexic.
Yeah.
So, I'm still 0.1 to the ghost. That's what I'm saying. It's
that sucks for the captain. Imagine moving in and then you burn your house down straight away.
Wait for it.
Oh, God.
It's also worth noting that this makes 3 times that the building on the Bawley Rectory land has burned down, which is pretty suspect if you ask me. Now, after this fire, an investigation was actually launched, and it was found that Captain Gregson had actually deliberately burned the rectory down. It's thought that he was trying to create, like, an attraction, and he thought that having it burned down would fit in with the scary ghost stories.
Should have waited those 11 months, mate.
100%. But yeah, basically this majorly backfired. He just burned down his house and he never made a cent from it. So, you know, Fair's fair. Following the Bawley Rectory burning down yet again in 1939, Harry Price returned to the Ashy Ruins once again to try and, once again, prove that there were ghosts there. He did this because apparently while he was examining the scribble writings that were on the wall, he identified a phrase that said either "the well tank bottom me" or "the well tank bothers me."
Well tanks bother me too.
Yeah, I don't like them. They're creepy. And basically Price interpreted this as a sign that there was probably a dead body, probably of the nun, buried somewhere under the remains of the rectory. So Price returned to the site and he started to dig. And he found
something.
By himself? Yeah. He just took a shovel and he's, you know, oh, and photographers. There's always photographers. But he's just digging away. But he actually found something. Buried in the burned earth was two bones. And this is where conflict comes in once again. If you ask Harry Price, he says that these two bones were definitely human and they were likely a part of the jaw and a part of the skull. He believes that they were remains of a nun named Marie Lair, who was thought to have been a nun, thought to have been the nun that had the affair and haunted the Bawley Rectory. On the 29th of May 1945, Price hosted a private burial for the bones with a local reverend, himself, and a photographer in order to give the bones a proper Christian burial. Now, if you ask pretty much anyone that isn't Harry Price, they'll tell you they were pig bones and they were not human at all. So,
I mean, they did have a pet cemetery there.
That's a good point. They were probably just pig bones. So, 1940, Harry Price publishes his book documenting his investigations and his visits to the Bawley Rectory and calls it The Most Haunted House in England. This is where the title came from.
Right.
1944, the rest of the rectory is officially demolished, but during this time, Harry Price maintained his fascination with the site and would return with photographers once again, in the hope of capturing more paranormal evidence. One day, they actually found something. A photo was captured with a brick floating 4 feet off the ground in midair that Price claims was the last phenomenon. Most people say, however, that the brick was falling, not levitating, and this was once again fabricated nonsense. 1948, Harry Price dies. 1956, three of Harry Price's peers co-author a book called The Haunting of Bawley Rectory, which basically accuses Price of being a fraud and deliberately making up all of the stories associated with the reported paranormal phenomenon at Bawley Rectory. That's pretty much everything about the Bawley Rectory that I could find, but if you'll notice, I haven't mentioned the Warrens yet, which I was like, but when did they visit? They didn't visit until 1976.
Oh, wow.
Which I was like, whoa, okay. So what I found out was that there's kind of the Bawley Rectory and then there was like a chapel that it was apparently like somewhere on the land. I couldn't find exactly when if things were rebuilt, if this was separate. It was all very, very confusing. But this was like the main timeline. But it was actually really nice because the Warrens made their first visit to the Bawley Rectory in 1976 and they would revisit every year for 20 years on their wedding anniversary.
Oh, that's cute.
Which I was like, you guys are spooky freaks, but I love it. And they, like, when you, so they're, I think it's their son-in-law who still does the paranormal talks and everything. He talks about so many paranormal encounters that they had there, that they saw the nun, that they encountered her, that nothing ever bad happened, but they saw all this stuff. And I'm just like,
Did you though?
Like, I respect the Warrens. I think they did some really, really cool stuff. And some of their stuff I 100% believe. But with this particular thing, I'm sort of like,
it's a bit wishy-washy.
It's very wishy-washy. And like a lot of the times when I'm researching cases like this, it's more divided. Did you just get blinded by the sun?
So bright all of a sudden.
Do you want to blind down or something?
Nah.
Okay.
I just needed a second to adjust.
Just adjust to daylight real quick.
Yeah.
But no, so mostly when I'm like researching cases like this, it's more divided. So it's like there's the believers and then there's the not believers. But everything I read for this was like, well, here's the story, but here's why it's not true. And here's this story, but here's why it's not true. Like, right. It wasn't, like, most people pretty much believe that this was bullshit.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I do think about is that, you know, sometimes the power of like belief can be pretty strong. So, you know, I'm sure if you believe in the paranormal world and things like that, if you have a location that's constantly being filled with people's fear, it wouldn't surprise me if ghosts are drawn to that. or demons or anything you believe, but
manifests a bit more.
Exactly. So maybe this is a site that has become haunted, but in terms of its beginnings, I don't buy it personally.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it was definitely not the case I thought it was going to be.
I like the idea that there's like a mystery monastery somewhere.
Yeah. Where's this Benedictine monastery?
It's just in the trees. It's a tree house. Well, one guy in there.
They just looked on the land. Have they looked above and below it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might be floating. You never know.
That's what I reckon. Like, I just think there's so many tunnels that like we just haven't found, and there's just secret shit everywhere.
Yeah. Like Atlantis.
Exactly. Where the hell is Atlantis?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
But yes, that was cool. Thanks for doing that. I didn't know you were going to do that.
It was a secret. But yeah. What's that's next awesome. On the list?
So, you know how you've been watching a lot of Prison Break?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be part of your recommendation session?
Oh, yeah.
It's great, huh?
It's so good.
How good's the tattoo reveal?
I spend like the whole episode just looking at details, and I'm just like, this is so smart. And now I'm trying to plan if I can like create a cool tattoo like that, but I don't know if I'm that smart.
No, I don't leave it alone.
It's so good. And just like the whole show is just big reveals and things.
So where are you up to?
I'm on like episode 2 of season 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've really been getting into it. This is why I'm a little unhinged right now, but I'm just like,
I think I watched all of it within like 2 weeks.
I feel like that's where I'm headed.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But you know what? I posted a story on my Snapchat and I was like, oh, I'm watching it. And it's literally 50-50. Some people like you were
like... It's like Lost.
Literally.
Some people love it, some people hate it.
Exactly. And
I love Lost because I love to hate Lost.
I actually haven't watched all of it.
Oh.
I've seen like the first 2 seasons, but I know what happens at the end.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, but I'm going to get to it. I'm going to go through it one day.
Yeah.
But no, like, everyone agrees that the first season is awesome. But then after that, 50% of people are like, best show ever. And then the other 50% are like...
It does get a bit nuts, but you kind of love the characters so much anyway that it doesn't matter.
Oh, it's so good. I could just look at the main dude, like, all day.
Have you watched The Flash?
No.
Or he's in that. He's a villain in that. He's an asshole. He's great.
I'm going to look at his whole filmography.
Is it Captain Frost? Something like that. He's got an ice gun.
I'm going to check that
out. And then he's also in... He's the same character in... fuck me, I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. The fuck is that show where they're all... It's like DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Right,
I was going to say the time jumpy one. He's in that too. He's my character in that.
Oh, see, I have seen none of those, but I feel like I'm going to go watch them after Prison Break.
Yeah, it's good. He's funny.
It's so good. I have a very bad attention span most of the time.
This is the first time you've ever recommended something that's old and I haven't.
Oh, how about that?
Woo, we finally swapped.
I'm so excited. No, because I watched 2 things. I'm going to talk about the other show I watched in a second, but I watched that, I finished that, and then I was like scrolling through Netflix and I was like, oh, I wonder if Prison Break's any good. And then my eyes have just been glued to the screen ever since. And
yeah.
I usually have a terrible attention span, but I'm just like, I'm so into this show and it's so like messed up at times and just really messed up shit happens. And then you're sitting there and you're sympathizing with the criminals and you're just like, what's happening to me?
Yeah.
But it's been a big few days, but I'm loving it. It's so good.
That's great. So what's your other one?
So the other one is another season of a show that's been on there for a while. It's called Haunted. It's on Netflix as well. But the new season is specifically Latin America. So it is in Spanish, but you can watch it with subtitles because I don't speak Spanish either. But it's real people telling real stories of how they were haunted by either like ghosts or demons or just all sorts of shit. But it's terrifying. And they do like recreations, but they're the most real recreations. Like it's legitimately scary.
Mm.
And the stories are awesome. And like it's so emotional because like these people have been like legitimately tormented. And I always study their faces because I'm like, how real is this? But like they're legit crying and they're like, it's like an intervention because they have the whole family there or like all their friends and they're like, I'm going to explain to you why I don't go out on this night, or I'm going to explain to you why this has always happened. And everyone's just sitting there like, I remember this happening. And like, is this what was going on?
That's nuts.
It's so good. Some of the episodes are pretty full on. Like there's one in particular from the, so the first, I think there's two seasons, the first two seasons, and they're only like 5 or 6 episodes, so there's not a lot of it, but the first couple seasons are in English, and there's one in particular where it's set in Afghanistan. It's a very intense episode because it's like a legit soldier and he's telling it about his time in there. So there's some pretty big themes and stuff, but oh, it's so good.
That's really great. Good.
Yeah, legitimately scary too.
So. Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm jumping on the New Amsterdam bandwagon with you.
Oh, yeah.
Except I am a bit annoyed about season 2 that they pulled one of their episodes simply because it was pandemic before the pandemic was a pandemic.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have just kept it.
Well, particularly since like Grey's Anatomy at the moment are writing COVID episodes.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that was, they shouldn't have pulled it.
Yeah.
They should have just, and instead what they did was they released like a weird start thing to introduce this new character.
Oh.
Yeah. So what they did was like, there's a new character that comes in and they just show his scenes from that episode that they pulled so that you could understand the character for the next episode that it rolls into.
That's just annoying.
And I was like, you really should have just done it.
Yeah. You can put a little warning just being like, this episode contains pandemic themes or something.
Yeah.
But, well, it's like, there's an episode that I actually have, like it's on the DVD box set, but there's an episode of The Simpsons which is set at the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
And they now don't air it anymore, but it's like, I think, you know, it doesn't make 9/11 okay, but it's just, it's set there, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, we can deal with the themes, just maybe put a warning on it, you know?
Yeah. But, I don't agree that they should have pulled the episode. Sure, the timing might have been awkward, but, like, just put something at the start rather than pulling it and, like, smooshing it together because it really threw off the whole. And it was, like, the, what's the one before the finale?
I actually haven't watched a lot of it.
No, like, what do they call those episodes?
Oh,
They have like the, I don't know, they have like the finale is the final episode, but then they have one before that, like penultimate or something like that.
Oh, right, okay.
And it was meant to be like a big episode before the finale.
Oh.
And so it just really ruined the flow and it really fucked. It fucked with the end of the show and it ruined it, I think.
Oh, that's really annoying.
Yeah.
No, not about that.
And my other recommendation station is The Irregulars.
How's that?
Good, but I also have a gripe.
Right, okay.
Can I, it's no spoilers because it's, I was sort of expecting it to be more Umbrella Academy.
That's how it looks.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay.
It's really good, and I really like it. But, like, the first few episodes, because, okay, so The Irregulars is about the underground, like, the homeless kids that, or the poor kids that help Sherlock and Watson with their cases, but it's the supernatural cases rather than just crime stuff.
Okay.
And for the first couple episodes, you meet Watson.
Mm-hmm.
You don't meet Sherlock.
Oh.
He's off screen or he's on a bed while somebody's under it or, you know, something like that. Like, you don't see him because Sherlock is such a big character.
Mm-hmm.
And then about halfway through, they bring him in and I don't think they should have done that.
Right. It kind of ruins the mystery. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because Sherlock is such like this big, especially like Tanner loves the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlocks.
Okay.
Like, absolutely loves them. And I love them too. And it's just, it's such a important character.
Yeah.
And he's very strong and he's very certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think they did it justice. So I think they should just left it out.
Interesting.
Yes.
I'm gonna have to watch this for myself now and see if
I think
agree.
It's good.
Okay.
It is good. It's supernaturally.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Okay.
But that's why it's kind of good because it's supernatural shit.
Did just you like, finish it or are you,
yeah.
Okay. Because I was like,
it's not very long. I watched it or? Yesterday. The whole thing.
Okay. Of course.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's only like 8 episodes.
Okay. I'll put it on my list.
But it's good. The actors are the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Okay.
Like the little, there's like 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And just every single one is great for a different reason. And amazing. I just love it. Yeah.
Those like good ensemble shows where you're just like, I love you all.
Yeah. And they do a really good job because I really like this of being inclusive without worrying too much about it being period correct.
Okay.
Like, there's one shot in the palace where, like, there are these two women that are, like, not making out but might as well be.
Okay.
And they're, like, kind of dressed royally. And you're like, that wouldn't have happened then because they would have been, like, shunned or whatever. But nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a show.
Yeah. And, like, just, yeah, it was very good, and I liked the way it was done, and it looks really cool.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah, I think people know we're a fan of a show that looks good.
Yeah. The effects and the costume and the makeup and everything. It's just great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's not shitty dialogue either.
Oh, good.
It's good. So that's my main recommendation is The Irregulars.
Okay. So between that, you've got some watching to do. You've got The Irregulars. You've got Prison Break. New Amsterdam.
Most people have seen Haunted. Prison Break by now.
I'm a bit late to the party.
You know what I thought about watching?
Mm.
But I'm not sure if I should. Breaking Bad.
Oh, do it.
I've never seen it. Do it. Yeah?
Yeah. I love Breaking Bad.
I've also never watched Parks and Rec, and I've never gotten further than season 2 of The Office.
Okay, don't watch The Office, because even I don't like that. Okay, no.
I'm not a comedy person. Like, it's just not really.
Okay, well, with Parks and Rec, I find it very funny. I really like it. But if you don't like The Office, it's difficult. I didn't really like The Office, but I love Parks and Rec. But if you don't like comedies, like, it's very silly. So if you don't like that,
If it's silly for the sake of silly, it's fine.
Okay.
I don't like comedies that try and be, like, real world funny. Because I really like, shit.
Have you seen 30 Rock?
Nah.
Oh. Okay.
There's a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Can't think of what to type in. One's a raccoon and one's, like,
bird.
A tall blue bird.
Yeah, that's
That's my version of Parks and Rec.
The regular show.
Yeah, I love that. Because that's stupid for the sake of stupid. That's all right.
Okay. I mean, you might like it.
Maybe I'll try it.
I can't judge it. I think
I might watch... Should I watch Breaking Bad first?
Yeah, Breaking Bad's just genius. Stick with it, because I reckon it dips a bit in the middle, but then they bring it home. But yeah,
if it's in the middle, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because usually I'm attached to somebody by then.
Oh, you get attached to everything. And then you end up hating people you shouldn't.
I've watched like the first couple of episodes, but I can't remember much.
It's a big show. But yeah, so good. Very clever.
Okay.
It's like Prison Break like that. Like, it's just clever and you're like, oh my God. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll watch Breaking Bad.
And it's just awesome because the dad in Breaking Bad is the dad in, oh my God, what's that show? Malcolm in the Middle.
Huh. He's so much younger there.
Oh yeah, that's why it's so awesome. This is why everyone loves Bryan Cranston, because like that was a big show for him to do and he was hilarious in it, and then he goes to play Breaking Bad and it's so much darker and you're just like, oh
my God. Okay, Breaking Bad's on my thing then.
That's my personal recommendation station to you.
Cool.
Yep. I was so worried I had that wrong then, but I didn't.
I just couldn't picture it in my head. I was like, no, he's really tall and he has like thick brown hair.
Yeah.
Which I was right. I was imagining the same man. I just didn't realize it was the same man. Yeah. I do that all the time though. I'll be watching New Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
The main doctor in that.
Yeah.
He's also the spy husband in Blacklist.
Oh,
Tanner watches half of one episode and goes, you know who that guy is though, don't you? That's why you like him so much. And I was like, no, who? I'm fucking useless.
I'm like you. Like you sit there, you're like, you look really familiar.
No, I don't even pick up on that.
Really?
Nah.
Oh, you're worse
I'm just
me,
like,
then.
Oh, I like them. And he's like, yeah, because you've seen them in 45 other things, you fucking idiot.
And you say this every time you see him on the screen.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Oh, see, I just sit there, I'm like, know you, and then someone will be like, yeah, they're in that show you watched yesterday. I'm like,
Have you ever watched Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency?
Oh, what?
Yeah, you should. It's great. Okay. I was just thinking about Elijah Wood somehow. I don't know how I got there. Anyway, I've been Ash.
I've been Laura.
Bye.
Bye, guys.